night at the Commander-in-Chief's ball, President Bush said to servicemen and women of our country, and I quote, "Many of you serve far away from home. This country owes a debt of gratitude to your families for standing by your side. So tonight we honor not only the men and women who wear the uniform, but your loved ones as well." End of quote. I couldn't agree more with the president. The reason that all of us are here today is to talk about taking care of the families of the servicemen and women who have made the ultimate sacrifice for their countries. We have a moral obligation to provide some basic financial relief and help to these families. We need to do right by these families. That's why every member of the United States Senate should vote to provide more adequate financial help for the military families who have lost so much. Today, more than 50% of America's men and women in uniform are married, and about half of those families also have children. Yesterday's inauguration reminded me of something President Abraham Lincoln said.
Shut the hell up, fool. This nonsense about we honor our men and women in our military and their loved ones. How? By letting them go homeless? By filling their lungs full of depleted uranium? Then you babble out, we have a moral obligation to provide for relief for their families. No, the conscious military people have to realize that their relief comes from disposing of you. And then you want to try to throw Abe Lincoln's name in there like he's some kind of high moral construct. This is the same Abe Lincoln that said, if freeing the slaves helps preserve the Union, he will. If not freeing any slaves would preserve the Union, he would do that. In other words, his priority was in preserving the Union. Well, our priority as slaves on revolt is preserving the slaves. Death to the slaver. You know what time it is. Slave time. Check it out. Listening to 101.1 Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUBER.com, the world, and radioforall.net, the universe, slave revolt time. Tonight we're going to finish part two of the movie called Rules of Engagement, i.e. Rules of Propaganda. Then we're going to blast into other issues of torture. And then, if we have time, since we got off to a late start, because someone keeps sabotaging our show before we start, and when I find out who you are, I will kill you. we'll blast into the next segment, if possible. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more. Our 104.1 Slave Revolt.
Seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
You see where they've gone? They're playing with the universe. They're playing with the solar system. Amount of energy that's going to flow out from that light off is going to do to the rest of the planets in the solar system.
You know what time it is. Beyond the Shadow. And tonight we're going to finish up on part two of the Rules of Propaganda movie, Rules of Engagement, that stars Samuel Jackson. As you heard last week, we dealt with how in this movie, basically it deals with the Samuel Jackson character, who's a little Marine. He goes to a U.S. embassy in Yemen and ends up shooting into the crowd after he takes some sniper fire. It turns out that there's sniper fire also coming from the crowd. But, and this is Jackson's argument of why he fired into the crowd and not just into the obvious snipers who were across the building. But what ends up happening in Hollywood world is they come after Jackson with a full frontal assault, even though there's videotape that was showing that people in the crowd, this Arabic eyes droned out crowd that doesn't care about gunfire going over their head, even though many of them are unarmed, that fire was coming from them, and they had videotape of it. But the Secretary of Defense decides to destroy the videotape and proceed in framing up Jackson. They get their little prosecutor and everyone in line to proceed ahead in this Hollywood form of American justice. Part of the premise is also a propaganda tool to give the image that, see, cats like Jackson, who do get a little rough at time, they need to be let loose. It's kind of the military version of the Clint Eastwood movies, when he plays the role of the cop, where he's always in conflict with the bureaucrats who just don't see how rough and tough it really is out in the streets of San Francisco. But if they have a dirty, hairy type of individual that is set free from all of the jargon and bureaucracy, things could get straightened up in a hurry. As we move on now, what part we're into is they're in court, and Jackson, Samuel Jackson's character, has been charged with murder and so on and so forth. Tommy Lee Jones, his friend, former G.I. Joe, who he saved actually in Nam, is his lawyer in the case. He's his defense lawyer. In this segment right here, what happens is Tommy Lee Jones brings a recording, a tape recording, and has one of the people on the witness stands decode, or may more or less translate what is being said in Arabic to the jury and to the listening audience. So let's see how this proceeds as we proceed from here. Check it.
Yes.
I found another one inside the embassy. In fact, I found several others. They're all marked Exhibit R. Will you translate the writing on the outside of that cassette, please?
Declaration of Islamic Jihad against the United States.
These audio cassettes are used for the purposes of religious and political propaganda due to the high illiteracy rate in Yemen. Is that correct?
Yes.
Will you translate the words you hear on this audio cassette for the court, please?
We call on every Muslim who believes in God and hopes for reward to obey God's command.
Dr. Omar, does it say what God's command is?
To kill Americans and plunder their possessions, whatever he finds.
Go on, please.
To kill Americans and their allies, both civil and military is duty of every Muslim who is able.
To kill Americans is a duty. Is that what it says?
Yes.
What was your reaction when you learned that Colonel...
Okay, so as you heard, in this particular trial, when Tommy Lee Jones has someone on the witness stand deciphering what he had found in Yemen, this little tape. Basically, it's this little, you know, Hollywood jihadist call to kill all Americans, so on and so forth. Once again, this really has nothing to do. I mean, even if this was a real case and not Hollywood, this would really have nothing to do with the charges at hand, which was, did Samuel Jackson fire on an unarmed audience who was basically protesting at the U.S. Embassy? Was it unwarranted? The fact that you have various, you know, anti-American forces, you know, or so on and so forth is supposed to be irrelevant. But that's not the way it's displayed out in this particular movie. So this is put in there basically to jazz people up into this they're all against us type of mentality and get people off the fact that the movie is supposed to be about was Jackson wrong in firing into the crowd. Now, of course, we know, as we deciphered earlier, this is Hollywood propaganda from another level, that U.S. G.I. Joes are always shooting up into crowds and stuff, burning up people alive, like the Somalian kid in Somalia over an open pit of fire. Or, well, actually it wasn't U.S. troops, but it was U.N. peacekeeping troops. And the only reason that they were there is because of this fake humanitarian nonsense that Sam got kicked off. In other words, these types of atrocities go on all the time, from Tiger Force to spraying Agent Orange to Bob Carey and his particular death squad crew that would use little babies in Vietnam to use as target practice, throw up in the air and machine gun them into little bitty pieces and stuff. This is a type of savagery that would go on all the time. Unless there is some kind of Abu Ghraib type of pictures to expose them ass out, they'll deny it to the end of time. Now, actually, going by the Hollywood movie, there was a videotape that was quote-unquote supposed to exonerated Samuel Jackson. But instead of them using that tape to exonerate him, the Secretary of Defense decides to burn it in a fireplace because he's upset about how he feels Jackson overreacted. So with the evidence at hand that by their particular laws, which would have exonerated and got the right-wing machine out there defending Jackson even more forthrightly, they already defend their G.I. Joes when there is no justification of defending them. Think Rush Limbaugh. Think clowns like O'Reilly, who were basically making excuses for the G.I. Joes of America when the whole Abu Ghraib scandal busted out. So the movie's just twisted that way, and they're trying to characterize the situation in a very narrowly nationalistic defining way. Now, what's also sick about this, and I'm not playing this particular part, is that, as I mentioned before, Jackson and the Tommy Lee Jones character were both in Nam together. And you see a situation in Nam where Tommy Lee Jones is bogged down and trapped by some Vietnamese forces. Jackson and them capture two Vietnamese forces. One's like a commander. And he tells them to tell his guys to pull back where he has Tommy Lee Jones trapped. And basically, they're about to kill him because they've killed a whole bunch. They got him trapped real well. They refuse to at first, so Jackson blows one of them that he has captured in the head that shoots him. Raw Dog. And then he turns to the other one and says, I'll do the same to you unless you call and have your forces pull back. So the guy has his forces pull back, and that's what saves Tommy Lee Jones' life. They end up having that guy on the witness stand. The prosecutor somehow finds this guy, has him on the witness stand, and when Tommy Lee Jones cross-examines him, the guy admits that he would have done the same thing that Jackson did, thereby justifying Jackson shooting an unarmed man. So the propagandistic measure of this movie is quite ruthless in all of its angles. From the racial type of coded thing of having Jackson and Blair Underwood, two little Negroes, be the main guys ordering the slaughter of the civilians. Even though we know that a lot of this stuff going on in Iraq and historically in these third world countries have had this racial undertone, but they were slyly able to color past that by having two Negroes in charge, you know, just to get away from that issue altogether. But next, let's move on as the National Security Advisor. That's who the guy was, the advisor who burned up the videotape exonerating Jackson. Bill Sokol, he hits the stand. And first goes through the prosecutor's examination of him, and then the defense led by Tommy Lee Jones. Check it out.
Shields have been selected for leaders.
I was very pleased. The colonel had a distinguished record. He's a nationally renowned.
How did you define his mission?
Well, we wanted to increase security, but frankly, if things got at all threatening, we wanted an evacuation.
You weren't looking for confrontation.
No, that's what we wish to avoid at all costs.
What was your reaction to what happened?
I was stunned. Appalled.
Wasn't the severity of the problem at the embassy understated?
Absolutely not. We operated on the information we had at the time.
I have here a State Department report from Yemen. Exhibit M. Will you read the underlined sections for the court, please?
Certainly. January 25th. Grenade thrown at police car. January 27th, 16 Western tourists abducted by fundamentalist group.
Go on, please.
February 6th, a bomb explodes in a car parked near a school. February 20th, stun grenade thrown at newspaper kiosk near a police station. March 13th, a military officer is seriously wounded by Yemen's first donkey bomb. Explosives were apparently concealed under the saddle.
Thank you. I have another State Department document dated 17 November. It's from the ambassador to you. Will you read this for the court, please?
Dear Bill, please, we must revisit our previous conversation in that the security measures we have taken are still inadequate for the protection of our mission to Yemen. You have to understand that when
Thank
I received
you.
This letter...
Now, there are... Well... Are there cameras mounted on the roof of the embassy?
Yes.
Are they designed to observe and record activities in the public spaces outside the embassy?
Yes.
Where are they?
Yeah, it's my understanding the embassy was looted. Maybe the cameras were destroyed.
This is a photograph. It is Exhibit D for the court. Picture of a camera on the embassy roof. Does it appear to be damaged?
No.
Where are the tapes?
I don't know.
Don't you think the United States owes it to Colonel Childers for 30 years of service to find that tape and produce it here?
Objection, we don't know anything about any tapes. This is pure speculation.
Damn. This is a shipping manifest. It's Exhibit O. There's a list of items that were removed from the embassy during the evacuation and shipped to the State Department. Will you read line 6, please?
Videotape from security camera, VHS 1.
You too busy to look at those tapes you just didn't get?
Objection, Your Honor. He's badgering the National Security Advisor.
Stand, counsel. Please proceed carefully.
Where are those tapes?
Objection. Asked and answered.
Oh, yeah, right. Don't you think it's funny that a tape that can exonerate my client is missing?
I don't think it's funny at all.
Mr. Sokol, withholding evidence is a very serious crime.
Objection.
Sustained. Counsel, rephrase.
Withholding evidence to frame a United States Marine is no less evil than charging my client with murder. Where are those tapes?
Colonel, I turned over all materials in my possession to Major Biggs.
If those tapes showed a nice, happy crowd of peaceful demonstrators, we'd be looking at them right now,
objection,
wouldn't we?
Objection, Your Honor. This is contempt.
Colonel, this is your last one.
There was a new security system. The cameras were pointed down at the crowd. Tapes were recorded, and those tapes were sent to the State Department. Why are those tapes not here?
Objection, Your Honor. I've seen no such tapes.
Further questions?
There are no tapes showing the crowd firing weapons.
None that I'm aware of.
And the government has turned over all of its evidence.
Of course.
Colonel Hodges has gone to some length to have you read security reports illustrating violence in Yemen, has he not?
Yes, he has.
Here is today's Washington Post. Will you read these headlines that I've underlined for today's Metro section?
Agent kidnapper killed in rescue of businessman's son. Bomb threat evacuates Museum of Natural History. Officer chases truck driver, fires 38 times. Husband shoots wife, himself in street.
Mr. Sokol, does this random, unfortunate news mean we should allow Colonel Childers and his troops loose in Washington, D.C.? Don't answer that. Thank you, Mr. Sokol.
Now, once again, this whole thing gets into this kind of fairy tale land. If you had a department or national security advisor, you know, this Bill Sokol character, and there was evidence that a tape from the embassy, the U.S. embassy, had arrived on his desk, a number of the top people had seen it, because in the scene, what happens is one of the guys is about to play it, and Sokol looks over at him and says, hey, what are you doing? He goes, well, you didn't want to see it. And he goes, no one's going to see this. So he takes it from him. He looks at it by himself later when he's alone, sees that the so-called crowd has some assassins in there firing at Jackson's little Marines, and then he just throws it in the fire. Now, you know that, first of all, he wouldn't have burned it up. He would have used it as a defense for the G.I. Joe's exoneration, because that's how the empire rolls. But on top of that, the whole corporate media would have had the go-ahead, especially the right-wing elements, to protect our troops. Protect our troops. It wouldn't have been, okay, just throw them up as a sacrificial lamb when evidence, according to them, helps exonerate them. But see, this is the corporate, this is Hollywood using its propagandistic mechanisms to make it appear like there's always these assaults on the military, on the establishment, on the police. Everyone's out to get them. Everyone's trying to do everything they can to undermine them from doing their job properly. This is why they do lose things like the Vietnam War. So they're spinning things completely on its head, and this movie is playing that role of a false advertisement.
Actually, it's a little irrational, as Tracy has pointed out, but I do think it's important to note what we're talking about here, see, is a phenomenon. They're trying to be sophisticated with it, and when you're jiggling and trying to basically do your head fixing here and trying to appear as if you're realistic and at the same time trying to spin it and lie, you get these irrationalities. Started off, there was a film called The Deer Hunter. After the Vietnam War, after the Vietnamese ran the United States out, they came out with this film, The Deer Hunter. And that was an attempt to smear the Vietnamese, make them look cruel and blah, blah, blah. You know, because they were playing, the Vietnamese would force American soldiers to play Russian roulette and also addicted them to, allegedly addicted them to heroin, and then had them, you know, playing this Russian roulette to make them appear really inhumane, etc., etc. But what I think what that was about then and now was to help the was to lead to the American public overcoming the Vietnam syndrome. You see, that's still something. The United States got their ass whooped. Let's look at it. And that will never change. No movie can change that. So they, what they are trying to do is to maneuver and manipulate people into sympathizing with the murderous, genocidal actions and cause of the military.
Well, what Deer Hunter also did with the whole Russian roulette thing was flip the whole script. Actually, it was the American-backed Vietnamese that shot the unarmed guy in the head. What Deer Hunter did was completely flip the story and had it like the North Vietnamese were forcing the American troops to use their American revolvers to shoot themselves in the head. So it was a complete reversal of reality and what really happened. So it was just a hardcore propagandistic technique. And I believe the Deer Hunter won like an Academy Award or some kind of award. So it had, on a certain level, its desired effect. When H. Bruce Franklin, who's written many books about the Vietnam syndrome and how the media manipulates it and stuff like that, or has been a manipulating tool, he's also a professor. When he's asked students about the shooting of the unarmed captured soldier in that famous photo, he says that, you know, almost every student knows of that particular photo, so it's kind of embedded in the popular culture's mind. But when he asked them whose side did it, it's the overwhelming number of people believe that it's quote unquote the Viet Cong doing it to the American-backed soldier. So this is how Hollywood and all of these myth makers are able to flip the story and rewrite it right before our eyes, because we have such a kind of pop culture type of mentality that's so quick to pick up some popcorn and a movie as opposed to a book and looking at real history and stuff.
There you go.
But next, Tommy Lee Jones closes his arguments. While the government rails against Childress with the false evidence, or at least this is Tommy Lee Jones's more or less claim. So check it out and let's see how they play it out near the end.
Another lay mortally wounded. He waited until he was personally under heavy fire. He waited until he saw that crowd holding weapons. Only then did he order his men to return fire. Under the rules of engagement, a civilian pointing a weapon is no longer a civilian, and the use of deadly force is authorized in order to save lives. Not murder. Combat. Colonel Childers is the only man alive who was in a position to see that crowd. But the camera on the embassy roof had the same point of view. The government would have you believe there's no tape from that camera. I have shown you that that tape was delivered to the State Department. Do you believe that tape got up and walked out of the State Department on its own? By not producing that tape, the National Security Advisor, Mr. Sokol, has brought dishonor into this court. Without that tape, I cannot show you that the crowd fired first. And Colonel Childers is innocent. But without that tape, they cannot prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he's guilty. Here's my case. Here's all I've got. 32 years of service. 32 years of heroism as a United States Marine. Regardless of what you decide here, Colonel Childers' career as a Marine is over. He will never again command men in combat. The ambassador and his family are alive today because of him, and I know how the ambassador feels because Colonel Childers saved my life too. I'm alive today only because of him. My son is sitting in this courtroom because of him. I'm alive today, and I have a son because of the heroism of Colonel Childers. To ask this man to risk his life for his country, to ask this man to watch his Marines
die in his arms and call it murder when he's defending himself, call it murder for firing back when fired upon, to call it murder for saving the lives of his countrymen under the most extreme of circumstances, that's my fellow Marines. That's hanging him out to dry.
It's worse than leaving him wounded on a battlefield. That is something you do not do if you are a United States Marine. And it is something that I pray to God you won't do here either.
Okay, so once again, we just go deep into the whole propaganda. Because, see, in the reality, the movie tries to present the kind of heroic, we don't leave our Marines behind, but, you know, these elements within the government, because they had this kind of liberal, soft on international crime, in this case, bent, they'll sacrifice their own. Now, here's the reality. The G.I. Joes are disposable. But they're disposable in the way the state defines them. They're disposable by the way they're using depleted uranium in the area, even though they know it's a weapons of mass destruction and it's going to devastate their own troops. We know they don't care about the foreign people that they're using these weapons on and the land that they're using it. But their own troops are dying. Look at these guys in from the first Gulf War, the whole Gulf War syndrome. Look at how many vets are already become homeless. Look how many vets have historically become homeless. Look at the large number of Vietnam vets that are homeless. The Gulf War vets, one, that are homeless. That's how they're disposable. What's also cynical about this movie is that every little propaganda clown around, anytime any movie comes out, let's say it's like JFK by Oliver Stone, they're quick to jump on and try to rip it apart for being conspiratorial. Yet, they can make movies that present them as the victims under a vast conspiracy of the government and so on and so forth against our poor little Marines. But this is not seen as ludicrous, even though it is ludicrous. See, this is how they, those in the Hollywood world manipulate the consciousness. This movie is not for no reason. You know, these are part of the apparatus of socializing a population into this kind of reactionary, gumpified state of mind. As we wrap this up with this last thing, we're going to find out what Childress finds out, if he's innocent or guilty, from the various charges that have been unleashed against him. Check it out.
Colonel Terry L. Childress, this court-martial finds as follows. On the charge of breach of peace, the court finds the defendant guilty. On the charge of conduct unbecoming an officer, the court finds the defendant not guilty. On the charge of murder, the court finds the defendant not guilty. This court martial is adjourned. Sentencing will be conducted at a time to be determined. Thank you.
So basically, Childress gets off. So basically, the way the whole movie works out is justice is served because righteousness always works itself out. One of the sickest scenes in the end is that the North Vietnamese soldier, who was the one that was captured by Samuel Jackson, him and his partner. His partner had a gun put to his head by Jackson and shot when Jackson told the two captured soldiers to call for a stand down of their men. When that guy is leaving with his wife, he turns to Samuel Jackson. These guys are on opposing sides, you know, and salutes Samuel Jackson. And then Samuel Jackson salutes him back. And they both just go off into the sunset. so you can kind of feel good that, quote unquote, justice prevails. Now, in reality, what's been happening on Sam's plantation is that even those Vietnamese that were fighting on Sam's side, the ones that really live here. Now, I'm talking about the Hollywood world where the North Vietnamese guys now living here and saluting guys who murdered their comrades in cold blood in violation of international law. But now what's happening in these little knuckleheads' real world is that soldiers who fought with Sam on Sam's side during the Vietnam War are having shootouts with American citizens over hunting hunting space and stuff like that one dude not too long ago in Wisconsin who ended up shooting up six hunters over a little hunting space, put their lights out and then went off into the woods. He may have killed more, he just ran out of bullets. You should see some of the stuff the right-wing websites are saying. They're trying to flip the whole script and use it as an anti-immigration ploy, even though this dude was down with their cause. Down with their cause. If you want to see exactly what I'm talking about, go to David Duke's website. David Duke has an extremely extensive website with his own radio MP3 like message on a lot of these topics, and then a number of written articles and stuff they use to back their dogma and all of that type of stuff, because he has this new organization, some kind of thing for European Americans and stuff. But what I'm saying is, to wrap this up, is that the same type of propaganda that you see coming out of a lot of these Hollywood movies is the same type of stuff that comes out of the mouths of the Fox News henchmen and out of Rush Limbaugh, CNN, and the rest of them. So not only do we have to close their mouths, but it's clear, for our own salvation, we're going to have to start closing some of their eyes, too. Hold on a sec.
There are thousands of these terrorists in more than 60 countries. They are recruited from their own nations and neighborhoods and brought to camps in places like Afghanistan, where they are trained in the tactics of terror. They are sent back to their homes or sent to hide in countries around the world to plot evil and destruction. Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them. Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them. Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them. Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them. Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them. 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 And every government that supports them.
The School of the Americas is a school straight out of hell. In the land of the free, free education is not truly given to U.S. citizens, but at U.S. citizens' financial expense to U.S. corporate-led Latin American military henchmen, who in this capitalist-sponsored tradition have inflicted with the teachings and thereby, of course, approval, some of America's most traditional ways of life on select portions of their own population. Traditional ways of life like murder, torture, and oppression. Now in this school straight out of hell, America's hell, much of Latin America's greatest foes to human rights and justice have gotten their training to the world's greatest foe to humanity, Sam. At the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. In this school of assassins founded in 1946 initially in Panama, but later moved to the U.S. in 1984 for safekeeping. Legendary murderers like El Salvador's Colonel Jose Mario Castillo is one of the SOA's products, a man cited by Salvadorian non-governmental human rights commission for the involvement of 1,051 executions, 129 tortures, and in tradition of Islamic based countries like Sudan and Christian-based countries like America's military, 8 rapes. The SOA trains 1,500 assassins a year in sniper training, combat skills, low-intensity conflict, psychological operation, and intelligence gathering, which they use against their own populations, Bolivia, Nicaragua under dictator Somoza, Haiti, El Salvador, and Panama. Manuel Noriega, ex-CIA asset, all have been clients of the SOA. An SOA Hall of Fame inductee is Bolivian dictator Hugo Banzer Suarez, who after coming to power in a violent bloody coup in 1971, developed the Banzer Plan, a plan to brutally suppress tin miners and church workers working for economic and human justice. The inhumane Banzer Plan became a blueprint throughout Latin America for strategies on repressing one's own population. On March 15, 1993, the United Nations Truth Commission report came out on El Salvador. The report cited scores of Salvadorian officers for atrocities against its own population. This inspired Father Roy Bourgeois, an ex-Vietnam vet turned Maronite priest, to found the SOA Watch. When the SOA Watch compared the UN Truth Commission findings with a list of SOA grads obtained from the National Security Archive, they found that soldiers that received the most U.S. training were involved in the worst human rights atrocities. For instance, of the three officers cited in the March 24, 1980 Archbishop Oscar Romero assassination, the well-loved champion of the poor, two were SOA grads. In the 1981 El Mazoto remote village massacre, where 800 unarmed men, women, and children were killed, 10 of the 12 officers cited were SOA grads. In the Sheraton Hotel murders of three labor rights activists by the Salvadorian National Guardsmen, all three officers graduated from, you know where. And in the November 16th, 1989 brutal murders of the six unarmed Jesuit priests, their housekeeper, and her teenage daughter, 19 of the 27 officers came right out of this school from hell. It's been on the heels of this injustice that Father Roy Bourgeois staged a nonviolent protest of the Jesuit priests' murders that got him shipped off. He spent a six-month vacation at the federal prison in Atlanta, along with Father Roy Bourgeois, 12 other persons, including a 74-year-old nun, a World War II vet, a member of the clergy, and a mother of eight, have all been sent off to prison for their nonviolent action commemorating the Jesuit and two female deaths. Yet none of these students from this school straight out of hell has spent any time in jail. 74% of the officers cited in the UN Truth Commission were trained at the SOA. Training manuals from the SOA were released after the courageous struggle by Jennifer Harberry, who was trying to find out the truth behind her Guatemalan guerrilla fighter husband's murder. A brutal murder the U.S. government lied about not knowing anything about, and were willing to let her die from her self-imposed hunger strike. The Intelligence Oversight Board found that not only was the CIA involved in Harberry's husband's death, but that the CIA helped train and gave assistance to the School of the Assassin's Grass. Concerning the manual, the Oversight Board revealed that the SOA at the school, quote, condoned practices such as executions of guerrillas, extortion, physical abuse, torture, etc., unquote. So in other words, a U.S. government school straight out of hell teaches the art of torture to its students, and thanks to this great Christian nation, right? A clear connection can be drawn to the atrocities that have been happening in Latin America, and where these techniques, as Father Roy Bourgeois explains, where they have been learned.
Whenever there is a human rights report that's able to get out of Latin America, we can be sure of one thing, that those responsible for that human rights report, for that massacre, for that atrocity, we can be sure that they receive training at the U.S. Army School of the Americas. I want to say one very important point also, that this school is not only costly in human lives and suffering, while we are cutting budgets to schools for our children, this School of the Americas, training hundreds of soldiers from Latin America in combat skills, that's taking billions of dollars from the taxpayer. Every dollar, I want to clarify, comes from the U.S. taxpayer. And I just want to say, I think this is shameful. This is outrageous, and I feel it's time that more and more people, that we break our silence, and we let our new Congress know exactly how we feel about it.
So these degenerates in the U.S. government siphon off the money from the U.S. working class to fund their Nazi-like school of death, to organize Latin American Gestapo military henchmen to suppress their own Latin American population. The reason for this goes back to some of America's corporate ways of life. Domination of the working class masses, domination of the environment, domination of the culture and the social economic way of life for capitalist exploitation. So it's no coincidence that there are 500,000 young women making export goods for U.S. corporations in Central America and the Caribbean. Young women working for Walmart in Honduras between the ages of 13 and 18 years old are forced to work 13 and 14 hour shifts Monday through Friday, and 23 hours straight through the night on Saturdays. To keep them awake during this madness, the employers played loud music, yelled at them, and at one time gave the exploited child laborers white pills that were probably amphetamines until they kept going into convulsions, which kinds of slows down productivity. The workers never heard of the corporate code of conduct, signed by but ignored by the U.S. corporations, that specifies an agreement to no forced child labor, workers' right to organize, and a right to decent working conditions. Yet the young exploited workers say that the conduct that these corporations that they work for are encoded with is the screwdriver in the sun. And where if you do something the U.S. corporations and their representatives don't like trying to organize workers for a decent life, you get bashed with the screwdriver and thrown out the stand in the hot sun. When Charlie Kernaghan from the National Labor Committee, posing as an environmentally conscious company looking to do work in places like Honduras and El Salvador, arrived at a company called Beth Forms, a woman's undergarment shop in Honduras, they talked to the owner about possible labor problems. You know, things like minimum wage, social security, and environmental regulations being pushed through if the workers organize in their own interests. The owner bragged about having no labor problems and that the 400 young women they have working for them are docile, quote unquote, meaning beat down, and that they have a computerized blacklist so no troublemakers can get in. Troublemakers like pro-union workers. When a woman did slip through and was seen passing out leaflets for workers' rights, they quickly tossed her out. These stories of suppressing workers' rights were heard over and over again. And when Kernaghan, still undercover as a business person looking for Latins to exploit, talked to John Sullivan, the highest U.S. private sector governmental officer, he said this to a hidden camera and recorder.
Well, we want your business here in El Salvador. He leaves over and he goes like this. He says, 40 cents an hour. That's a world-class wage. He says, you're going to make a lot of money here. But don't keep the money hourly rate. He said, put them on a piece rate and speed them up. You're going to make a lot more money. Then he goes on, we ask him about the labor problems. He says, labor problems? He says, there's a computerized blacklist. Let me tell you how it operates. This is the head of the U.S. government. He says, they've got a list. You want 500 workers. He says, guaranteed 1,000 are going to show up. And his own management has the list. They will compare the list with the people coming through. And they can tell you, that one's a union organizer. That one was fired 2 months ago. That one's sisters are a religious fanatic. He says, you get rid of them. Don't worry about it. They run a top-notch operation. This is the sort of reality that goes behind this global economy when you try to put a human face on it.
And in tradition of never having any shame, the USAID, U.S. Agency for International Development, became aware that places like Honduras, where businesses were booming, were running out of young women between 14 and 18 years old to exploit. The U.S. government stepped in to pay Price Waterhouse with U.S. tax dollars a fee to perform a vegetative growth on young females versus corporate capitalist expansion. They found that the rate of young women between those ages wasn't growing fast enough. So Price Waterhouse did a survey on the vegetative growth on girls between the ages of 10 and 13. Now in Honduras, this is the same country where barbarian General Roberto Hernandez, who was tied to the Colombian drug cartel and the repression of you-know-who's class of people, and also a SOA graduate, and a Hall of Fame inductee there. Another graduate from the SOA is Honduran General Carlos Garcia, a brutal dictator that ruled during 100 and 150 disappearances of Honduran people. These are the type of ties the U.S. government and its U.S. institutions of death have between these Latin military governmental oppressors, all at the behest of the U.S. corporate class and their corporations like Walmart, Levi Strauss, The Gap, JCPenney's, and Nike, and the corporate class warfare against workers, in which corporations like Nike's slogan, Just Do It, is really meant for the exploiters and their Latin SOA hitmen that help oppress the masses in the region to maintain the social economic system oppression against the workers over there.
What this school is all about is keeping the military in Latin America in control, in power. It is through the militaries of Latin America that we, through our foreign policy, can control the civilian population, mainly the poor, who make up the vast majority of the people there. Let me say this. There can be no hope for the poor of Latin America improving the quality of their lives until those in uniform step down. And what this school is all about is keeping the military in power. And of course, what they're all about is to defend a socioeconomic system in Latin America that keeps the rich rich and the poor poor.
So it's no surprise when you look beyond the veil of capitalist deceit that where U.S. corporations receive 7% on the return of the dollar from U.S. workers, they get 14% on return from Latin workers who are more oppressed. And in places like Brazil, the rate of return on the dollar is 25% on direct portfolio on investment. The more oppression, the more profit in capitalism for capitalists. And in that capitalist tradition of profit over human worth, the U.S. government spends $103 million tax dollars under USAID again for an industry ad journal directed at and for U.S. Canadian corporations claiming quality, industrialness, and reliability, with a picture of a woman by a sewing machine that states, quote, Rosa Martinez produces apparel for U.S. markets on her sewing machine in El Salvador. You can hire her for 57 cents an hour, unquote. And workers are held kept in check for U.S. corporations' exploitation by the school straight out of hell graduates like Colonel Domingo Machuez, who was cited for 318 tortures, 610 illegal detentions, and guess what? None of those he tortured were corporate capitalists or their human-run factory farm contractors. And if these butchers don't get enough training of murder and torture at the SOA, these SOBs practice their savagery like two Panamanians admitted in the documentary film School of the Assassins that homeless persons became their candidates of Jack the Ripperism, all under the medical expertise of an Americano. All in all, the military training and armament given by the U.S. government to Latin American countries and beyond, and the building up of their armies at U.S. tax dollar expense is used by these regimes to keep their own enemy class, the working class, poor, and peasant population in check. These Latin armies aren't protecting nobody and no societies from the outside. These armies are used to protect the banana-like republic ruling elite classes of Latin America from their own indigenous poor and working class populace, who they are helping to exploit with the U.S. ruling capitalist plunders, which is why a capitalist vulture from a New Jersey company called Avalon, a company that makes little trinket lapels, boasted, quote, we have a factory in China where we have 250 people. We own them. It's our factory, unquote. Spoken like a true capitalist criminal. What he's saying, in effect, is since we corporate capitalists own the means of production, the organizing and planning of the structure of the society and the social economic foundation of it, and we have our SOAs, our CIAs, our DEAs, our FCCs, and our OPDs, for that matter, to protect our interests, it's our factory, or in other words, it's our world. The question is this capitalist school of exploitation that has created its own capitalist hell on planet Earth, like the one in Fort Benning, Georgia, a world you wish to live in? This has been Tracy James with a commentary. The School of the Americas is a school straight out of hell. Out. Time it is, shameless file time. And our next book, what we're going to deal with is quickly a bill of death. What's the price of your soul? And for the GI Joes, a bunch of senators and other thugs are basically hoping it's $100,000. In essence, what I mean is a number of little wretched senators and so on and so forth, like Mike Devine. They have set forth a game plan that if you get smoked in Iraq or some other far off place where you really don't belong, they'll give your family $100,000. That's what you're worth. First, let's hear Mike Devine, Senator, talk about the need to support the troops. So let's see how they shamelessly couch it. And then let's quickly take it from there. Check this out.
Speaking of that, Mike Devine, Senator Devine, who we'll turn to shortly, who has a specific interest that has been longstanding in this bill and a particular aspect of this bill, just came back from Afghanistan and Iraq and interacted extensively with our military. Leader, thank you very much. Last night at the Commander-in-Chief Ball, President Bush said to servicemen and women of our country, I quote, "Many of you serve far away from home. This country owes a debt of gratitude to your families for standing by your side. So tonight we honor not only the men and women who wear a uniform, but your loved ones as well." And of course, I couldn't agree more with the President. The reason that all of us are here today is to talk about taking care of the families of servicemen and women who have made the ultimate sacrifice for their country. We have a moral obligation to provide some basic financial relief and help to these families. We need to do right by these families. That's why every member of the United States Senate should vote to provide more adequate financial help to military families who have lost their money. Today, more than 50% of America's men and women in uniform are married, and about half of those families also have children. Yesterday's inauguration reminded me of something President Abraham Lincoln said in his second inaugural address. Quote I think we're all very familiar with, but it's very applicable to what we are about today. And I quote, "Malice toward none, but charity for all. The firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right. Let us strive on to finish the work we're in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who should have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan." It's time that we do a better job in this country of caring for these families. And so I intend to stand on the United States Senate floor with my colleagues who are here today to make sure that this Congress does what is right. I know that my colleagues have had the same experience that I have had, and I'm sure this is what inspires them as what has inspired me, and that is to go to the funerals, the calling outs of the young men, who women who have died in service to the country, and to see the surviving families, see the widows, see the children, sometimes as young as just a matter of weeks, and to wonder what is going to become of them. Are they going to be cared for as far as medical care? Are they going to get adequate medical care throughout their life, throughout their time that they're growing up? And then when they turn 18, are they going to be able to go to college? I think that we need to take care of these kids.
All right, let me get right at this rhetoric this dude is speaking. First of all, let me make it clear once again that the support of the troops in any way, the U.S. troops in any way, is a support of the international terrorist empire's overall agenda. They cannot fulfill any of their goals, overreaching or not, unless they have a subservient class of troops fighting for them. Now, this empire is a bigger threat to humanity than the Nazi government, the Nazi Germany could ever hope to have been.
So it has to be put into context that any apparatus of consoling the troops, the U.S. troops, and not sharpening their class understanding and consciousness is actually a detriment to the world population internally and externally. One of the dangerous things that I think is starting to go on now in Iraq is you have segments of the ruling class that rightfully see that there's a lost cause from the standpoint of them being able to occupy Iraq like they once had dreamed of. But this does not mean that a vicious empire like the U.S. government just throws up their hand. One, they have a disposable population of their own that they are more than willing to drag on and on and on through the valley of death in Iraq. But two, because of the crisis that they're in strategically, from their ruling class perspective, even if they're not able to expropriate the wealth of the Iraq oil the way they want it to, they don't want to leave any kind of halfway stable infrastructure society in Iraq at the hands of the insurgents. Because as torn up as Iraq is, if they were to leave like right now, you would basically have the insurgents in control by and large of a stable enough society and structure that could be a hornet's nest for furthering the agenda of unstabilizing many of the decrepit regimes around the region, many of which Sam backs. So Sam is willing, even though its initial goals in many people's in the ruling class's mind have been thrashed, and in reality it is gone, they're not going to be able to occupy it that way, they are more than willing to go through a genocidal Carthage like solution in Iraq, where they'll grind this thing on for 2 or 3 more years and completely destroy the infrastructure completely, to the point where, since they have an insurgent force that, while it is very embedded and entranced on getting out the imperialist forces, it is not like a true liberation force where it has kind of a vision of a world outside of the capitalist framework, outside of human exploitation, outside of the oppression of women, outside of the oppression of the bourgeois culture of Abrahamic religions, you know, Islam, Christian, Hebron, all of that type of stuff. So what I'm saying in essence is that you can end up, if Iraq is just completely torn up to the point where the insurgents finally get, in the years go by, the imperialist forces more or less out, the society could be so destroyed that they'll have nothing to work with. And because of their particular type of mindset and ideology, many of them, they often then turn inward on their own communities and end up getting into these tribalistic type of conflict for power type of surges, similar to what you have seen in like Afghanistan, you know, with the whole Taliban type of thing, where you see more fraternization than anything else. So in many ways, the U.S. empire would see this favorable than leaving the region of Iraq right now, where there's still room and flexibility for a more cohesive type of development. as opposed to it starting to turn inward when all types of things have been demolished. Because the reality is there's no limit that Sam will not go to maintain his hegemony over the world. And if that means going into some kind of genocidal program of continuous bombings and bombings, week after week, month after month, year after year, at the incredible expense of large numbers of population in Iraq, so not to leave the insurgent forces with any kind of real operating engine and infrastructure to work in, Sam would do it before a blink of an eye. And this is the danger of not having troops in America and a population in America take a more aggressive tone about just how vicious, barbaric, and genocidal this particular society really is. Now, also, what's also interesting is that when they go into how they want to have an adequate medical care for the people, their little GI Joes, this is just more propagandistic rhetoric from the standpoint of they're just trying to buy the souls of the troops. Because, see, they know they kind of need them right now. They don't want to pull that draft lever. But the fact that they're now trying to talk about giving them more money and things of that particular nature, let's not forget, you've had past troops that they've let waste by the river. You've had Gulf War vets in the first Gulf War come up with all kinds of syndromes because of the toxic soup that exists in the region because of the U.S. empire. And basically the same government, these same senators, just turn their head and their nose and walk the other way. You see Vietnam vets laying on the streets homeless all throughout the country. And these same senators and this same government has basically pushed them to the side, turned their head and their nose the other way, and stomped the other way. So the fact that now they're coming out with this new gimmick is basically a technique of trying to buy the souls of a disgruntled populace, of a growing this population of disgruntled soldiers, and they're trying to smooth off the rough edges and keep them in check and have them believing that they're not as savage as they really are. This is what I mean by this is just the bill of death. And what is the price of your soul? Hold on a sec. That's just gonna about wrap it up with Slave tonight. As time goes by, the viciousness and shamelessness of the U.S. Empire clearly knows no bounds. As they try to wrap you up in their Hollywood propaganda in movies like Rules of Engagement, i.e. Rules of Propaganda, to shamelessly pushing out senators to try to buy a piece of your soul, to at the same time while they're hollering about fighting world terrorism, have their own terrorist camps throughout the country, and a mainstay in Fort Benning, Georgia, the School of the Americas. I know they changed the name, but hey, That's just like expecting a leopard to change his spots. The reality is through all of this mist, propaganda, and death, sometimes you just gotta walk on by. Until the next time, slave revolt.
Making me cry, no, no, no. It's the hurt